It's straight up at 9 o'clock on the Mornings with Ed show, and welcome to a Thursday. As we've been doing the last several weeks, we've been dedicating the 7 and 8 o'clock hour to all the science, all the facts, and all of the important stuff that we talk about here in the mornings. And then at 9 o'clock, you and I escape musically. Generally, it's a bunch of different eclectic, very, very cool songs put together. The last few Thursdays, though, we've been doing albums in their entirety as kind of an homage to that show that Tyler does on Friday. It's called Full Album Friday, where he brings a new band in. They go over their complete brand new album, song for song, track for track, and talk about the production of it. That will be back. And we miss it. That's one of my favorite parts of the radio station is Full Album Fridays. But that'll be back. That's at the end of the tunnel of this whole thing when we have bands back in studio and such. So as an homage, we've been doing albums in their entirety. And today, oh, baby, we've got a good one. Dark Side of the Moon is the 8th studio album by Pink Floyd, released in March of 1973. It was primarily developed during live performances. The band premiered an early version of this record several months before actual recording began. New material was recorded in two sessions in 1972 and 1973. It was recorded at Abbey Road Studios in London. Now, the record builds on ideas explored in Pink Floyd's earlier recordings and performances while omitting the extended instrumentals that characterized their earlier work. It is a concept album. Its themes explore conflict, greed, time, death, and mental illness. The latter, partly inspired by the deteriorating health of founding member Syd Barrett, who left the group in 1968. The group used recording techniques like multi-track recording, tape loops, analog synthesizers, snippets from interviews with the band's road crew, as well as philosophical quotes. All of that were used. Engineer Alan Parsons was responsible for many of the sonic aspects and the recruitment of singer Claire Torrey. Remember that name. She appears on The Great Gig in the Sky. It is one of the greatest vocals in rock and roll history. The album was promoted with two singles, Money and Us and Them. And oddly enough, both of those songs, it was promoted at the time where albums were side one, side two, right? Both of those songs on side two. Dark Side of the Moon received critical acclaim and is often named one of the greatest albums of all time, which in fact it is. And I've said this before, though, they're such a great band. It's really not even my favorite album of theirs, but it is one of the greatest of all time. It is Pink Floyd's best-selling album and, of course, one of the best-selling albums worldwide. They were in the top. This is insane here. They charted Billboard's top 20 for 950 straight weeks. I'm going to say that again. Dark Side of the Moon charted in Billboard's top 20 for 950 weeks. That is 19 years. That is amazing. Bassist Roger Waters proposed that a new album could form part of the tour. His idea was for an album that dealt with the things that make people mad, focusing on the pressures faced by the band during their arduous lifestyle and dealing with the apparent mental problems suffered by band member Syd Barrett. David Gilmour said, "I think we all thought, and Roger definitely thought, that a lot of the lyrics we had previously written were a little too indirect. There was definitely a feeling that the words we were going to use for this album were going to be clear and specific." As I mentioned, it was recorded at Abbey Roads in two sessions between May of 72 and January of 73. The band were assigned staff engineer Alan Parsons. You remember him from the Alan Parsons Project. He worked as the assistant tape operator on their earlier album, Adam Hartmother, and he gained a lot of experience by being a recording engineer on the Beatles' Abbey Road and Let It Be albums. The recording sessions made use of advanced studio techniques. The studio was capable of 16 track mixes, which offered a greater degree of flexibility than the 8 or 4 track mixes that they had previously used. The first track recorded on June 1st was Us and Them, followed 6 days later by Money. Then Time and Great Gig in the Sky were recorded next. That was followed by a 2-month break during which the band spent time with their families and prepared for an upcoming tour of the United States. The Sessions suffered regular interruptions because Roger Waters was a supporter of Arsenal Football Club, and he would often break to see his team compete, and the band would occasionally stop work to watch Monty Python's Flying Circus on television. And who didn't stop what they were doing to watch Monty Python's Flying Circus in those days? Here now, side one, Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, Mornings with Ed, Personal Stash.
I'm not frightened of dying. Any time will do, I don't mind. Why should I be frightened of dying? There's no reason for it, you've got to go sometime.
Side one, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. That was Claire Torrey in one of the greatest rock and roll vocals you'll ever hear. The album credits include Claire Torrey, who was a session singer and songwriter and a regular at Abbey Road. She'd worked on pop material and a ton of cover albums. And after hearing one of those albums, Parsons invited her to the studio to sing on this composition, Great Gig in the Sky. She declined this invitation as she wanted to go see Chuck Berry perform live, but arranged to come in on the following Sunday. The band explained the concept behind the album. but they were unable to tell her exactly what she would be doing. Gilmore was in charge of the session, and in a few short takes on a Sunday night, Tori improvised a wordless melody to accompany Wright's emotive piano solo, and it is a work of art, my goodness. She was initially embarrassed by her exuberance in the recording booth and wanted to apologize to the band, only to find them absolutely delighted with her performance. Her takes were then selectively edited to produce the version that you heard just now. For her contribution, she was paid the equivalent of about 400 euros in today's money. In 2004, she sued EMI and Pink Floyd for 50% of the songwriting royalties for that song, arguing that her contribution to The Great Gig in the Sky was substantial enough to be considered co-authorship. I would agree. Yeah. So clearly the band did as well. The case was settled out of court for an undisclosed sum, with some rumors saying it's about $25 million. And she gets pressing crediting with the band jointly. So she has credit on the pressings now jointly, as well as about $25 million. Let's continue now. Side two. Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
Thank you.
definitely wasn't the right.
on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass, remembering games and daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more. The lunatic is in my head. You raise the blade, you make the change, you rearrange me till I'm sane. You lock the door. Someone in my head, but it's not me.
Yeah.
How should you listen to Dark Side of the Moon? Uninterrupted and in its entirety. Human-crafted radio, KXFM. Man, I am so proud to work here. 9:51 the time on the Mornings with Ed show. We just heard the entire greatest, one of the greatest albums of all time in Dark Side of the Moon. The band is David Gilmour, vocals and guitars. Nick Mason on drums, percussion and tape effects. Richard Wright, of course, on the Hammond organ and all piano. Roger Waters, again, bass guitar and vocals. You heard Claire Torrey earlier as a vocal on Great Gig in the Sky. And if you wondered about that magnificent saxophone that you hear during Us and Them and Money, well, that's Dick Perry. Dick Perry, for the longest time, a session saxophonist. Amazing sax solos on both of those songs. You know, the album features Metrotronic sound effects during Speak to Me and tape loops during the opening of Money. Mason created a rough version of Speak to Me at his home before completing it in the studio. The track serves as an overture and contains crossfades of elements from other pieces of the album. A piano chord replayed backwards serves to augment the buildup effects, which are immediately followed by the opening of Breathe. It just flowed together so beautifully. Mason received a rare solo composing credit for Speak to Me. The sound effect on Money, well, those were created by splicing together Waters' recording of clinking coins, tearing paper, and a ringing cash register. And there's a clicking adding machine. Those were all used to create a 7-beat effects loop that was later adapted to 4 tracks in order to create a walk-around-the-room effect in quadraphonic presentations of the album. Now, at times, the degree of sonic experimentation on the album required engineers and the band to operate the mixing consoles, faders simultaneously. This is all nerd stuff, and if you're an engineering nerd, this is right up your alley, and I'm digging this. Along with the conventional rock band instrumentation, Floyd, of course, added prominent synthesizers to their sound. For example, the band experimented with an EMS VC3 on Brain Damage and Any Color You Like, and a Synthy A on Time and On the Run. They also devised and recorded unconventional sounds, such as an assistant engineer running around the studio's echo chamber during On the Run, and a specially treated bass drum made to simulate a human heartbeat. And you heard that just there as we ended during Speak to Me, On the Run, Time, and Eclipse is where you heard the heartbeat. It's most prominent on the intro and outro to the album, but you can also hear it sporadically on Time and On the Run. Now, we have artists in town, lots of them, and we have artists who are supportive of the station and dig the artwork on the album cover. Well, that artwork was created by their associate, a guy named George Hardy. The band had a choice of 7 designs, but all 4 members agreed that that prism that you see was by far the best. The prism with the multicolored lights going through it. The final design depicts that prism dispersing light into color. The design represents 3 elements, the band's stage lighting, the album's lyrics, and Wright's request for a simple and bold design. The spectrum of light continues through to the gatefold because the album was originally a fold-out. It had a gatefold to it. Originally, that light continued to the gatefold. That's an idea that Waters came up with. Added shortly afterwards, the back of the album cover contains a suggestion of another prism, recombining that spectrum of light and facilitating interesting layouts on the sleeve in lots of record shops. It was cool when you walk into a record shop and the way they had them lit up sometimes. It was an honor to play that album in its entirety. It's one of the greatest albums of all time. It was suggested by a listener, and I cannot thank him enough for that suggestion. You just heard it, Uninterrupted. That was Dark Side of the Moon.